No, I gotta tell you about this dream. So, Alex just walked in. I was asleep because I'd slept through my alarm, and he knocked on the door and is like, "Hello?" Because he arrived at the agreed upon time to arrive. So, let's not get it in anyone's head that he was too early. But I was mid dream, and I wanted to share this with you. So, my family and I. We went on a trip to Italy. But I will say the reason we went was because I had convinced my family that it would be a good idea to go and try and play Balatro at the source, quote
What?
unquote,
I'm sorry.
at the source.
Yes, Italy,
In
where they
Italy.
invented Balatro.
Balatro.
Yeah, you played too much of that game.
It's so I don't think I think that's just the right amount. Anyway, in my travels, I don't know why, but we had agreed that there weren't enough seats to get back via the plane for everyone, so I donned a wetsuit and I swam back to the United States from Italy with the help, also with the help of like a magic broom that I was using to sort of like kayak myself through
So it wasn't a flying broom.
No,
It just kind of like it was like an oar.
Yeah, it was an oar, but it was a broom and it helped push me through the water. And man, there were a lot of dolphins. It was really cool. It was a really cool dream, but also very scary. I think it took me like 5 hours, and I know this because I had just had to look at the time in Italy because I, as one would do, if they had to swim back via magic broom, forgot my luggage and I needed to make
Of
sure.
course.
And I was checking the time zone difference. I was like, "Huh, okay." And I was like, "Oh yeah, uh-oh, how am I gonna get all my stuff back?"
This isn't a
But I
Job
tried.
versus the volcano situation. You're not
And
riding that luggage back.
it was when I was when I had just realized that it was around like 9:30. And they had would have already left for the plane that you knocked, and I woke up, but I had this like feeling of like, oh, my stuff is gone.
Oh. And then, well, I woke you up,
You
and you
woke up,
sounded very
you're scared.
confused.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? I just thought that was more fun. That was a more fun dream than my usual affair. So I thought it would be fun to share. I don't think it has anything to do with this episode, so
No,
we're just
not
gonna get going.
whatsoever.
This episode of Stormbuds, we're talking about the Dark Knight job quest. Ooh, our inner darkness, resolving that stuff. Let's go!
Buds, a storm of buds, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome to Stormbuds. I'm your sleepy, delirious host of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I am joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock, who is mid-tea sip. Say hello, Alexander Hambrock.
You weren't kidding. This tea is pretty hot.
It's really hot. I was just ranting about how long it takes for tea to cool down.
I mean, also, these mugs are so large.
These mugs are huge.
That, like, the surface area to volume ratio gets a little off, maybe. Like, it's
that's
a lot.
Fair. It's a lot. It's a lot of temperature. That's how science works.
This is the largest mug I have ever drunk anything out of,
Science
I think.
Counts the temperature, and that's how hot it is.
That's not wrong. That's not wrong.
Yeah, no. That's how it works. This is the video game podcast where all our segment bits are Final Fantasy 14 jokes.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a video game podcast, and we started out recapping all of Final Fantasy 14 as we played through it. You can go back and listen to all that if you're new here and you want to know more about that journey. And the reason I bring that up is because today we're going to recap a little bit more. We are going to cover the Dark Knight story quests. The Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight
2008
story quests. Yeah.
Predates the game. They kind of just imported the script and built a series of quests around it, which is a strange creative move, but I understand why you'd go in that direction. I mean, in 2018 when Shadowbringers is coming, or no, this is Heavensward, right?
2018?
So Heavensward's 2016?
Yeah. I think 2018 was Shadowbringers.
Okay, yeah. 2016.
Continue with the bit.
2016 when Heavensward's coming out. Obviously, like, you know, the Nolan Batman movies are still live in the consciousness. They haven't been eclipsed by the MCU or anything. So you would just, you know, do get a licensing deal with WB and see what you can do.
I'm sorry to future editing me where I just shoved the microphone in his face because I'm like, man, how many times I have to tell you, put that thing on your face.
All right, it's on my face.
Now it is because I beamed you with it and it probably made a terrible noise.
I could mess with you a bit and like try getting up really close on it, but I'm not going to do that to our listeners.
No, it's these things run quiet. It's a common complaint about them. I wish I had done a little more research. You really have to get in there. But no, the it was really strange. When Emmett Sugg said, "Do you want to see my scars?" Anyway,
where is the trigger?
where is Vanilla? Where is she? God, I am tired, but not really. I'm waking up. I'm excited to talk about that, but we've got stuff in our quest log we got to cover. Listen, let's not beat around the bush. I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I want to talk a little bit more about it.
Tell me about it.
It's really good. I'm not as high on it as the folks at like TripleClick. They've been saying that they have not had their life taken, or they've had their life taken from them from this game. And I don't think that's the case for me. I think this game has some frustrating elements that I've run into. It has such a wide, an impressively wide array of mini games. Similar to how Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom do an impressive wide array of distinct mini games within their shrines, and some of them are much worse than others.
I have been hearing this. The one thing everyone seems to agree on about this game is that the mini games are confusing or not always fun,
or they're awesome.
Or they're awesome.
Yeah.
What are some of the awesome ones?
Queen's Blood, the card game.
Okay.
The card game is great. The piano minigame is fucking so fun. I love the piano one. It's so stupid. But some of them are just frustrating.
Like?
The sit-ups one is back. And it's got haptic fucking feedback. Unlike the workout ones.
Oh, because you're playing on your PS5?
Yeah, so. That's how they added haptic feedback on the trigger ones. And then when you're like struggling, you have to hit the fucking haptic feedback L2 six times in a row, and it hurts.
You can turn that off, right?
Not for the minigame.
Can you disable it like a system level? Can't you?
Maybe?
Like...
Can you? God, I hope so. Even though it would have meant that I didn't need to do all that and was frustrated for nothing.
I thought you could turn off the haptics and
I'll look into it. I'll look into it. It's
it's very funny if you can't.
God, it's... Oh, it's like a rhythm game, but the rhythm gets slightly faster, and then the meter isn't visible, so you just have to like look at your character, but you're always like falling behind because you're not perfect, and you're like doing exercises in like four different chunks. I hated that one. Did it on the max difficulty last night.
That sounds great.
No, it's still a very fun game, but especially at its core. But yeah. Had some shit to say about the sit-ups.
Without going into any details.
Tifa's abs are rock hard now.
Have you hit any stuff in the story that feels kind of divergent in the way the first game was messing around with?
Oh, yeah.
Or, okay. There's stuff going on.
Yeah. That's the best way I could put it. It's stuff going on, and mostly it's the stuff that they alluded to at the very end of Remake, right? At the very end of it, and also at the very end of Intermission, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know how that all weaves in right now, but otherwise it's been a blast. I also have been playing Balatro, but I talked about that dream in the open.
That's our Balatro minute for the episode.
That's our Balatro minute, which is not really about it, but just been making good progress on that. How about you? Tell us.
Well, I alluded to it last episode, but I did go see Dune 2.
Dune 2.
Dune 2, the sequel to Dune.
Gom Jabbar. The sands of Arrakis.
Yeah, sure.
Walking like this.
So I have read the original Dune novel years ago when I was a teenager, because I was that kind of sci-fi nerd in high school.
Man, that's way cooler than what I did. I read the Iliad.
Man, the Iliad rules. What are you talking about?
Oh,
I read the Iliad for the first time all the way through a few years ago, and I was like, this rips.
Yeah, it kind of does, yeah. But I was still dorky. It's still really dorky when you're like 14 reading the Iliad. I guess I
don't know that Dune was that much better.
I don't know, man.
Dune was old even when I was in high school. Sure. Anyway, so I have some fondness for Dune, but I do think also it is on some levels a quite stupid novel. And I liked the first movie quite a bit because I think I thought it actually did a pretty good adaptational job of making some stuff work for screen and be a compelling sort of cinematic experience. I'm going to break with the consensus on this one. I did not like Dune 2 that much.
Uh-oh, hot Dune 2 takes.
Everyone else is really into this movie, and I actually think it might have needed to, like... So you kind of tend to get two experiences in watching a movie based on a book, right?
Yeah.
Either the movie, like, is a real sort of work of creative adaptation in which it's, like, possibly reinterpreting things or rethinking things or, like, redoing the material in a way that makes it work better for screen. Or it is attempting to adapt the book fairly straightforwardly in a way that can often feel like a lot of things are juxtaposed and mashed up against each other because they're sort of just hitting a bunch of stuff really quick and people who know the plot of the book will know what's happening, but everyone else is kind of confused. And Dune 2 is kind of more of the second than the first, which also makes changes to the plot. Like there's a toddler in the book who's now just a fetus, but still talks psychically to her mom in a way that gives her prophecies about the future. So that's different. But there's still a lot of like fundamental plot structure that doesn't really work. And in particular, this movie goes off the rails at the exact same point that the David Lynch movie goes off the rails, like the old one from like the 80s. And so I think that there's something about the story structure here that just you need to get into the guts of it and try and rework it, because two directors have taken a stab at this now and both of them hit the same point and then kind of their movie starts spinning out.
Okay.
So I don't know. Great spectacle, good special effects, big movie, but kind of a mess in a way that I was a little disappointed by.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate, but you know, thanks for sharing your opinions, your hot takes. And that was an episode of Storm Blank Check.
I have time for movies lately, okay? I don't have
that's
time
great.
For much else.
Listen, I'm not making fun of you with saying that, but that's just the segment. Sometimes segments come organically. There are certainly someday in the future we're going to do an episode about a movie, right? That's going to happen. We're going to be two busy adults with very important things to do. We're going to be like, fuck it, we're watching Advent Children or whatever.
Oh my God. Or like God. The Spirits Within.
No, that's hardly a Final Fantasy movie.
Yeah, but like
it has the name on it.
As a historical artifact. Okay.
I don't even know if it is. Well, of course, the meat of our episode is the Dark Knight quests. We're going to talk specifically about, we only did, I'll be honest, you only did the 30 through 60, so the Heavensward stuff. We didn't have space for the Stormblood arc of it, but it doesn't really matter too much. I will say, though, that, of course, before we get into it, we are going to take a quick break and get a word from our sponsor.
This week, we're inviting you to check out the trailer for the new, hotly anticipated Prestige Limited Run Apple Plus TV series. It's going to take you, it's another historical drama. It's going to take you back in time to one of the most undersung rulers of Spain. We're going to follow him as he, you know, unites the Iberian Peninsula and, drives out various invading factions, purges the communists, and ultimately unites Spain under one banner. That's right. It's Apple TV's Franco coming this September.
That's right. You can check out Franco this September with James Franco in the titular role as he portrays the trials and tribulations of Francisco Franco and goes into all of the important nuances of Francoism.
Yes, we're going to get, you know, it's an undertold story. It's really only had one historical perspective up until this point, but we're going to kind of get inside the man, understand his love life, understand his trials, his tribulations. You know, based on the trailer that I saw, it's got a bit of that modern thing going on. We're also, there's a little bit of quippy dialogue, but you know, that makes it fun. It makes it go down smooth.
Also starring Jonathan Taylor Thomas as Juan Carlos I, the successor.
He looks really good in this.
He looks great.
The makeup job is incredible.
He looks really incredible. This is an exciting 20-episode run of Francisco Franco.
Each episode is like, I think they're saying each episode is going to be about 160 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very in-depth, striking portrayal of the brutal dictator.
I hear the budget for this was like $500 million an episode. Like, they've blown like a third of their annual revenue.
They call it
this.
A budgetissimo.
I don't think we can get a better ringing endorsement than that.
Yeah. So check out Franco on Amazon,
Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV Plus. Please don't use the promo code.
No, don't.
Don't do that one.
Just watch the trailer. That's all we're being paid for this week.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of Dark Knights, let's... What? Boy, that was... That paycheck was so generous and so real. We've got a lot to talk about with the... with our vigilante justice, caped crusader, our rich, privileged kid in the streets.
I was born in the streets of Ishgard.
So, okay.
Take it away.
Okay. Dark Knight quests, starting with a dark spectacle. We're going to do this full recap style. I got a full set of notes here.
I just call that sunglasses.
There's thematic stuff I'm not super sure about in these quests, but we'll talk about it as it comes up. Also, my notes for the first few are a little thin because not a whole lot happens, and then they get more developed as stuff happens. Why am I explaining this? People are going to listen to the episode. They're gonna get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it starts off pretty straightforwardly. First three quests are A Dark Spectacle, Our End, and Ishgardian Justice. Basically, all of Ishgard is abuzz with chatter about the latest heretic who met their end in the arena.
Your favorite.
Yeah, totally. We've heard of them before. They were slain after a tremendous fight, and as punishment, their corpse was just dumped in the broom on the street to sort of just rot on the cobblestones. I stumble across it. I pull a crystal from their body. I immediately get knocked unconscious. And when I awake, they seem to be standing up and addressing me. I guess they weren't dead after all. Maybe they did. Maybe they survived somehow. And they introduce themselves as Frey. And they think we're about to start undergoing magic puberty, basically, so they must talk with us.
Mm.
What we learn here is that Dark Knights are...
They start grooming us. They're starting to fill that armor out.
There's some psychosexual dimensions to this whole thing, if you want to go that route with it.
I kind of don't, and I kind of wish I hadn't started. Continue.
Dark Knights are basically vigilantes, much like the Batman himself. They're willing to do what others will not to bring the powerful or the cruel to justice. Immediately we're called to demonstrate this fact by rescuing this girl who's been kidnapped by the Temple Knights, because the Temple Knights apparently just take girls off the street. And so we do this whole little duty where we run through and kill a whole bunch of Temple Knights. And the whole time Frey is along our side being like, yes, yes, don't you feel it? The anger. Oh, aren't you enjoying killing all of them?
Honestly, yes.
And I'm like, okay.
Okay, yeah, they're shitty.
They are, but also like... We'll talk about it in a sec. The Voice in the Abyss / Heroic Reprise are the next two quests.
Mm.
When the girl was taken, we heard a voice calling the girl's name, but her mother did not.
Jessica.
So we're hearing voices in our head now, which is concerning. But Frey is like, no, voices in your head. That's part of being a Dark Knight. And we can enhance it. We're going to go out and we're going to kill something dangerous to get ourselves worked up. And then you can commune with the darkness, which involves slow breathing, casting our minds into the abyss and trying to connect with this voice, which is a wanderer without rest who we may be fated to meet.
Jessica.
I don't think her name is Jessica.
Tiffany.
The next time we try and commune, it's not as easy and the killing seems more pointless. So Frey seems kind of like pleased with us being annoyed at all of this. Really what Frey is leaning into here is it's time for us to really embrace how much we're annoyed by everyone else. So we need to go rescue some pilgrims from some Amalja, and the whole time Frey is just like, man, doesn't this suck? Why can't these people look after themselves? Why do we need to do everything? Leave the blood on your blade. Make sure people know how fearsome you are and how dangerous you can be when you're pissed off. And then at the end of all this, we rescue these people, we commune with them, and we get a voice saying it's time to serve, save, slave, and slay.
Say it. That's
say the thing.
That's just way funnier in the year 2024.
Serve, save, slave, and slay.
Oh, not the third one, but the definitely ending with slay.
Serve. You gotta serve. You gotta save. And you gotta slay.
Oh man, sorry. Continue. Or drink tea. God, this tea is really good. It's had like popcorn in it. It's like got a salty, corny flavor to it.
It's unusual.
It's really good. It's really good. I needed something with caffeine after my delirious dolphin Italy Bellatro swim back nap.
So And then Frey says that what we have to do is we must recognize that which matters and forsake all that which does not. And a couple of things here.
Mm.
On the one hand, kind of the arc that they're sketching for the Frey stuff over these first set of quests, which I do think works, is sort of like what Frey says appears to be mostly sort of like innocuous or just sort of like encouragement to kind of embrace our angrier or more frustrated emotions. But then increasingly it's going to get kind of more unhinged in a way that's kind of like, oh, actually, like, is something wrong with this guy? Like he's sort of like going a bit too far with it, getting a bit too aggressive, getting a bit too mean in ways that become off-putting. And I think that that does work effectively. If I have one criticism of these quests, and it's really sort of just like a larger structural problem with doing it in a game like this, it's because the Warrior of Light has no real characterization that we're really able to impart into them diegetically in game. A series of quests like this that project a bunch of like intentions and assumptions of sort of like attitude and behavior onto our character really depend on the player behind the keyboard resonating with those. And like, I know people who do. I know people who, like, I have seen people talk online about these quests in particular and the idea of sort of like the dark self, the other self, very Jungian, like, you know, that meaning something to them and like interrogating that through these quests.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have like a dark, angry self who I'm like in a state of dialogue or combat with. And so a lot of this is sort of just like interesting to me, but feels a little bit disconnected from my character.
Mm.
That's my big thesis on sort of these quests as a whole. I think that they're very well written, but the emotional layer did not quite hit for me in the way that I think it hits for some other people.
Okay.
In that context, though, Declaration of Blood is the next quest. Obviously, we're coming back after all of these. Like, you know, you go away, you level up for a bit, you come back. So time is kind of elapsing each time. So we come back and Frey is not happy with our progress.
Who is this person? My therapist?
We have not heard the voice since the last communion. And he says, I'm not taking the lesson seriously. And I'm like, I really need to know more about what this voice is and what darkness actually means. Because I'm like, dark, embracing your inner darkness has to be more than just embracing the impulses of anger and violence, right? There's got to be more going on there.
Maybe it's just chaos and entropy.
Yeah, it could be. Just sort of like pursue the end of all things.
The opposite of stasis.
But no, but then they're into justice. Their whole thing is justice. So
stasis is not justice. Sometimes justice is a beheading.
You're right. You're right. You're right. Actually, you're joking, but actually the linkage there does kind of work, I think. The idea that like the darkness is like the impulse to act and to and to not just sort of like allow things to be as they are if they are unjust. Yeah, that bit works.
Cool. Well,
so we go to the Lanaska docks, and we hear one of the Limsa Limits and Company, who recognizes us from the whole Leviathan operation, arguing with a trader who has a sob story of being robbed by bandits. And like we, of course, get asked to help with this. Frey's immediate thing is like, I fuck off. I seek worthy prey, not rats. But of course, we agree to it because we are the protagonists of this game. And so we take all quests that are presented to us. Frey is like, look, if we're going to do this, at least fight without limit. Let yourself free. And then we go to the bandits who are Quikern, and we do slaughter the shit out of them.
Hell yeah.
Which, it's a bit overkill for a robbery. Like, they, yeah, sure, they took that guy's goods, but I don't know if, like, 20 of them deserved to die in penance. Like, it's not, this bit does not quite feel like justice. And to be fair, I don't know that the game, I think the game actually also thinks this is a bit fucked up, because we get back and the trader is like, the goods you got back are all soaked in their blood. This is no good. What am I going to, I can't sell these.
Warrior like, of Light you are.
Frey is, of course, outraged at this. He's like, you spineless sack of shit. I killed your enemies for you and I fetched your things. I do what you people can't or won't do for yourselves. You're helpless, weak. All you do is want and need. And then he says something very interesting, which I sort of was picking up on, but is made more explicit here. He says, I should have left you all to drown in Leviathan's tidal wave. At least then I would have been spared your constant whining. And he runs off. And it's like, yes, okay, we are doing something with the idea of the shadow self here. We are doing something with the idea of, like, the darker side of our nature.
Oh.
Like, I find him, and he seems distraught, and he's talking on a very personal level, and he's saying, hey, we can't keep doing this. You see what they do to us. He says that we don't need people anymore. All we need to do now is to hearken to the voice and discover our true calling. So we do one more kind of like communion, and we hear a chorus of voices crying out for a hero. And he says, like, you know, that, and then Frey is like, hey, you hear those voices, but you will also hear my voice.
Mm.
And then we exit the vision, and Frey is like, look, hey, throw yourself into the void where I will soar. There are other lands than this, lands where we are not known. Ask and we will depart for them forever. Only when you have renounced everything are you free to do anything. That bit is very cool to me. The idea, of, like, again, of this, like, that the alternate self that's sort of being presented here, that presumably has been kind of like inside us, quote unquote, all along,
yeah,
is themselves a person with their own impulses and desires and sort of like wishes for like.
And they run off when they're upset.
And they run off when they're upset.
If you had a shadow self, where would it run off to when it was upset? Mine would go. I think mine would. It's like the lake is too easy, because that would be, that would maybe be like my light self. I think the shadow self would probably just head to the bar and start drinking.
I was gonna say, like, my light self might go to the library. My shadow self might
well, it can't leave us hanging. Got impulse, act.
My shadow self might just go to like a vacant lot by the river.
I love that. Oh, man.
The last thing Frey says is, only when you've renounced everything are you free to do anything. Like, they're like sort of a force of almost pure selfishness. That brings us to the quest, our answer. It's time for us to go to Kurthus. We plan to meet with Frey outside the gates, but he's nowhere to be seen. And then some knights of my fan club run up, and they're really excited because there are some nearby raiders, yada, 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 etc. I'm really uninterested, but they keep begging, so we go slay the monsters. And, the knights keep laying it on thick how impressive it is that we just do everything for everyone without desire for fame or reward for ourselves. And then, like it, again, it's hitting the theme of, like, don't you feel underappreciated? Don't you feel like these people take you for granted? And I don't, because it's a video game. But I get what they're going for. Mm-hmm. Lord Drillamont is demanding our presence. There have been allegations that I have been seen talking to a corpse in the broom, which is creeping everyone out. And he's like, yeah, you seem like something is wrong with you, so you need to surrender your weapon. And then we have a duty, and we rush up to find out that
it's the
actually
grand melee.
Just about. Actually, Frey is just attacking everyone. Frey is already inside the compound and is just attacking all of the knights. And he's like, they must be mad if they think we just surrender our weapon. He's like, pay attention, Zagreus. This could be the greatest moment of our life. His eyes glow, and the truth is finally revealed. He is me. He has been me the whole time.
Wow. My shadow self wouldn't be named Frey. Mine would just be named Gay.
What? It's hit me. It's my face.
Is that your scream?
I mean, I don't want to blow the mic out, but
you don't have to. Okay. I appreciate that. But also, if you could, like, look at the waveform, you'd be like, oh, I have space. I'm sorry. Continue.
Frey continues and tells us, hey, you have a sword and a soul crystal, but what you wanted was a mentor with gifts and knowledge, a man free to do and say the things you could not. Has he not been good to us, given what we promised? See the truth. Oh, and then he collapses and a shade emerges in Dark Knight armor with our face. And we fight him. I guess he's called our esteem. And we defeat him.
Hmm.
And then knights and mages from the base run up and promise never to forsake me, even having now seen, quote unquote, my dark side. That's very nice. Thank you, everyone. You've all witnessed a very personal journey of self-actualization, and I appreciate your support. Who are any of you? They all have, like, names and stuff, but I don't know why I'm supposed to care about them.
This is the most Tetsuya Nomura Kingdom Hearts.
It's very Kingdom Hearts.
It's very Kingdom Hearts. It's just thank you. That's a very nice thing. Who are you? Where am I? What is this?
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say I have a better grasp of what darkness means and the shadow self in these 10 quests of the Dark Knight stuff than in the 3 full Kingdom Hearts games that I have played.
Wow, you've actually played them all.
I've played 1 and 2 and the GBA one.
Oh, yeah, right. There's more than 3 Kingdom Hearts games.
Oh, there are so many.
I don't know how I forgot. They've all got really fantastic names. Is that the end of the... That's pretty much the end of the Realm Reborn, quote-unquote, stuff. That's like the first arc of this.
Basically, the Esteem keeps ranting. He's like, no, they're going to keep doing this. They're going to keep making you into their Warrior of Light, their tool. We can be free. He's like, I can't believe it's over. But we approach him, and he gets real sad, and we touch hands, and we reintegrate.
Yeah. Fun fact, this NPC's gender is dependent on your gender, so
makes sense.
Yeah.
Which, like, I did notice a kind of, like, one of the tip offs was like there were no like gendered pronouns being used.
Yeah.
I was like, in a similar way to
they didn't want to do as much, they wanted to do as little work with the text as they could. It's a good start. It's certainly more compelling arc than most, if not any, of the other job quests. Or class quests, maybe?
That actually, though...
We're not done yet, but...
That reminds me, though, Smalta version. Have there been, like... Have people done, like, interesting, like, gender reads in the fact that, like, you can have a female protagonist, but Ardbert presumably remains male throughout, like, Shadowbringers and stuff like that?
No, I think because Ardbert's a different person entirely.
But, like, it's like... He's, like, your soul sort of, like...
Yeah, reincarnated or you're sundered. You share a common ancestor. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that gets out of the Heavensward stuff, which I was expecting kind of a straight continuation of this, but we're kind of done with my shade self for now. Mm-hmm. Instead, we get a whole new plot line starting with the Wages of Mercy. The Temple Knights need my help.
The girl kidnappers. Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, no. Yeah, this is my problem with Heavensward. This is why I was so mad at the heretic stuff in our patch ranking, and why it caused me to rank that one so low. All of the Temple Knight heretic everything is so inconsistent and so stupid, and none of it makes any sense. And it,
all those clips of you going, "What is this religion?" It's still funny.
I mean, the Temple Knights, to their credit, I guess, as bad guys, are tricking me here. They rush up, and then actually, it's an ambush. They believe that I'm an abomination because of all that dark shit I did.
Oh, abomination! Remember that Prop 8? That Prop 8 ad?
You were just, because you have not played these, you were just stuck trying to riff.
I'm thriving, I'm moisturized, and I'm in my lane. If people didn't hear me wanting to riff on this shit, they probably shouldn't have been listening for this long.
Anyway, at this point, we're approached by a very cool, tall anime man with white hair and pale green eyes named Sidurgo.
I don't have a riff on that one. Sorry, you can keep going.
Yeah, so Durgo, he comes up and he frightens off the knights. He said he's been tracking me down ever since he heard somebody was wielding Frey's sword, because he trained with Frey and is glad to see us carrying on his legacy, even as he's shocked about the whole dark shadow self thing, which I guess is not an intrinsic Dark Knight thing, because he doesn't seem to have one. Or, like, if he does, he...
No, that's just because we ran into that Frey freak.
That's just because we're magic. Okay.
We're magic, and that crystal is making us see things, I guess.
Got it. Right. But Sidur goes, he's going to train us on being a Dark Knight for now. He tells us more about their backstory. The first Dark Knights took up arms against the clergy and stood for justice, even as it earned them the scorn of the common man, because he says the people will listen to the lies of the enemy and they will cast you out. So then I was like, okay, I do have to ask, as Dark Knights, then where does our moral framework derive from? Is it purely internal? Like, in what ways do we connect to any sort of, like, moral or ethical structure in the outside world to ground ourselves and make certain that we're not just sort of, like, going around killing people that we don't like? And they don't ever seem to answer that. I think that's kind of what we do.
I think you may have hit the nail on the head.
Also, I couldn't quite tell here. I think I might have gotten special text because I'm also Alra. Sidurgo is an Alra character. I couldn't tell if the way that he was talking about it referred also to, like, to me in, like, the we collective first person.
Maybe.
Or what. But Sidurgo does talk about how the Ishgardians were suspicious of the Alra when they first showed up because they look like dragons. And he says, they came for us and we spared them. And what did that get us? More violence, more bloodshed, death for every man, woman, and child. Those are the wages of mercy.
Okay.
They never do anything with, like, the different racial stuff in this game, except for these occasional little allusions like this, which are...
I think it's fine.
I'm actually okay with this. That is a minefield that I understand the game wanting to generally avoid, but it's interesting when you get tidbits like this.
Yeah. I think this kind of was their hook for including the Alra in this expansion, because they otherwise have absolutely no presence whatsoever in the Heavensward zones.
That's true.
Like, yeah, this is the just... only, like, there's nothing on the Astrologians and, what are they called? Machinists quests. There's only, like, the two Aura NPCs in the Alexander quest. There's no, like, villages with Aura NPCs in them until Stormblood. And they're on the other side of the fucking world. So I think this is they had to just sort of shove something in. So that works. I don't know. I mean, I would be interested to know what the decision-making process was for any aspect, including any aspect of an expansion, but particularly player characters like that, because it doesn't always seem to fit with the narrative.
Yeah. It's game development, right? Like, people are developing different things at different paces and sort of trying to line it all up at the end.
It's just, yeah, it's just kind of like, oh, we have Viera and Shadowbringers now. There was like the Viera zone on the first, I guess. So that kind of worked out. I think maybe they saw the same thing. They were like, there aren't really any NPCs with our new races, so we should probably do that. So they had the Viera zone, the Greatwood, and then they did the field exploration with a lot of catmen. So we'll see in Dawn Trail if there's cat lady stuff.
Yeah, because like the big NPC is a cat lady, right?
Yeah.
The one supposed to be like
new cat,
our new anchor, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. That's a good term, anchor, especially because we are sailing by ship. Okay.
Anyway, that brings us to the knight and the maiden fair. Sir Durgo needs our help. His master, in his final moments, spoke only in riddles. He said, "A heart bleeds, a man weeps, a soul burns. Thence comes the darkness to consume. Yet even in the depths, the flame endures. Submit to the flame and harness the abyss." What the hell does that mean?
I just played Hollow Knight. I don't want to go through all this again.
Frey and Sir Durgo puzzled over that as they journeyed until they met this little blonde girl named Riel, who is wanted by the Temple Knights for...
Oh, cripes. Not, no.
Oh, do you remember her?
No, I think she's great. I'm just like, gosh, she's wanted by the
Temple
Knights.
Yeah,
she's a small girl.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so all three of them were on the run. And Frey was out getting supplies when he got, and now Sir Durgo feels he must continue protecting her. Because she's some sort of abomination, apparently. And we're going to get a compressed version with Riel here of like what I wanted Thancred and Rhene to have going on for like the entirety of Shadowbringers.
Yeah, it's weird that they like did this and then did it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Because this is going to be the whole thing here. Is that Sir Durgo kind of like, he's protecting this girl, but he kind of sucks. And she knows that he sucks, and she gets increasingly fed up with him over the course of these quests. So whatever, we're like, what? Why is she an abomination? What's going on here? So we go and visit Devanu to see if their etheric perception can figure out what's going on with her. But we talk to one of them and he's like, oh, her vibes are bad. Go away. And so we run away and also fight out some Temple Knights.
They just keep coming for this girl.
Kindred spirits. Maybe the conjurers of Gridania can figure out what's wrong with Riel. Defending her against Temple Knights the whole way down, we get to Gridania, and she has... we discover she has an intense spiritual power. Great, thanks. Super specific. But then we're told, have we heard the tale of the boy and the dragon Gay?
This is a book. Where is this book? I think it's in the Great Google Library dungeon. The Boy and Dragon Gay. Yeah, it's in the Great Google Library hard mode. So most people have, because it has the word gay in it, and they were like, myself included.
And it turns out it's got some lore in it, because it's an old story about a man who partakes of the dragon blood and becomes dragon himself. Heretics hold rituals for such purposes, and we're like, did she ingest some ancient dragon blood? Riel makes it to speak up about this and gets completely cut off, because Sir Durgo is under-impressed with this information, and he thinks it's all nonsense and lies. And then he says, also, why don't you speak up for yourself, girl? And Riel just looks very frustrated.
Yeah.
And she says, like, look, there were no windows, just walls of stone with little cracks to tempt your fingers and iron bars colder than ice. She was imprisoned somewhere and possibly fed the blood without knowing or understanding what was happening. And then she says, at least if they catch me, they'll just kill me this time, which is a terrible thing for a 12-year-old girl to say.
Mm-hmm.
And also implies that, like, oh, just something is going on within the knights here.
Yeah.
Original Sins is our next quest. We need to get more info from the Dravanians. So we go to Vidofnir. We have to give some flowers to a dying dragon, and they in turn take a look at Riel, and they recognize that she's a kindred spirit.
Yeah, she's one of us.
There's dragon blood in her veins, but it's not mingled. She did not take part in the essence. It was just passed on to her parents.
Oh.
So Cid, as I'm calling him, thinks that the Temple Knights are never going to leave this girl alone. It looks like she was born to a heretic, not one herself. And that's when we get back to Ishgard and we confront a lady knight named Istrid. And she's here for the abomination. And we're like, condemning a girl to death for her parents' deeds, is this really the will of Helone? And she's like, hell yeah, it is. It is 100% the will of Helone.
Finally, we get to understand what this religion's about.
It's about killing this girl.
Yeah, I guess fleshing out of the details is mostly in the side quest.
Istrid is like, will you submit to trial by combat? Sure, I guess. So, and then Riel like runs after Istrid as she goes off and says, mother, wait. And it's like, oh shit, this is her mom. And then Istrid says, I should have had them cut out your tongue. And yeah. Cid is like mad at Riel for keeping this from him. He's like, we've been protecting you. You didn't tell us any of this information. We needed to know this. And my note just says, she's a child, man.
She's a child and a victim. She has no agency in this entire situation.
Really, she doesn't.
Jeez.
The flame in the abyss. Cid has figured out the whole truth. Sounds like for countless years, the sons and daughters of House Caligunant.
The French.
Of House Caligunant have pledged themselves to the church. Istrid was in line for the clergy until inquisitors came for her husband, who was a secret heretic who drank dragon blood. He responded by defiantly drinking dragon blood and transforming, and she just had Riel locked up as a result. And so the dragon we're talking to is like, hey, go look for the Moogles and see if they can help you. So we go to the Moogles. But in the process of seeking out the Moogles, Riel finally starts going off on Cid. And she says, look, she's getting sick of this. You tell me to talk, but refuse to listen. You tell me you're doing it for me, but then you go on about darkness and the abyss. Am I supposed to be grateful when you come back covered in blood and I put you together so you can do it again? You drag me halfway across the world to learn new ways to kill yourself and tell me it's for my sake. What's the real reason we're here? And I was like, damn, girl, yes.
Finally.
We don't get a lot of resolution on that immediately, because we run into the Moogles, and they tell us that we just need to dance and submit to the flame of dark emotion, and we gather some herbs for them, but also it's not clear that we're not just doing their chores for them again.
And then
the Moogles do their best to stage a kidnapping of Riel so that we'll get angry at them and try and fight to get her back. But they're not very good at it. They don't really put on a convincing performance, although Cid somehow falls for it.
Like, hey!
They're extremely basic pantomime sort of like threats and like
convinced you.
They get him riled up. And Riel calls him out and is like, hey, you are just basically using this as an excuse to sate your own bloodlust for Temple Knights. At this point, after we rescued her, quote unquote rescued her, Cid realizes that she's right and he apologizes. And then at the end is like, man, it was a waste of time going to see those Moogles, though. We didn't get anything from them. And it's like, they just helped you through the emotional transformation that you needed. So zero self-awareness from Cid any point in this process.
Fantastic character.
Last quest here. Absolution. Okay, we're off to duel Istrid in the frozen wilderness, which Riel just seems cool with at this point.
Well, it's frozen.
Yeah, I mean... yes, I suppose she has let it go.
A lot of money on comedy classes to make that joke.
She's very grateful for everything that she learned from me, Cid, and Frey. Oh, that was easy. Okay. Out in the tundra, Istrid says that Riel sickens her and her resemblance to her father. And then Cid says, Riel is not her father. You have no right to punish her for her actions. Which completely misses the question of, like, should her father have been punished also? Like, it's not clear to me that, like, Cid, like, the moral framework here still feels a little lacking.
Yeah.
But Istrid openly says that she plans to murder her child. So I guess we're just going to fight her. And then it turns out it's not actually...
get Istrid this sword, bitch.
Also, it's not actually a duel. Istrid brought like 15 people and we just cut our way through all of them on our way to her. And then we fight our way to her, at which point she rages in confusion and is like, why do you even care so much? It's just this one girl. And Cid says, others have asked me that. You might have understood once. You are her mother. And then he swings his sword to frighten her and tells her to leave and that they will not meet again. And at this point, I'm like, Sid, I don't think we can let this lady leave. And even Estrada is like, yes, we will. I'll follow her to the ends of the earth. If I have to the ends of the world. Halone wills it. And then Riel finally gets up to walk up and say, how great your love for Halone, so much greater than any for me. For a long time, I prayed for your forgiveness, for you to hold me in your arms as before. But I know that that will never come to pass. I will pray for you, Mother, which is much better than anything Sid has said. Yeah, and then Sid finally lifts his sword up, and Riel starts reciting an actual prayer to Halone, and we get a slow-mo shot of Sid decapitating Estrada as her expression turns from maniacal laughter to something like fear, and her corpse collapses into the snow. And I guess we go back to Ishgard.
Sweet! Back to the beautiful beautiful sights and sounds and smells of the broom.
Yeah, we go back to that bar.
We go back to Corpse Town.
And we're all just like, Sid's like, you know, I think I get it now. I understand rage and protection and all that. And I'll keep protecting you. And she says, you know, you can do that, but you got to talk to me more and also actually listen to me. Hmm. And Sid admits that maybe the Moogles had a point after all. How heartwarming.
Well, that is... That is a wonderful recap and presentation on the Dark Knight storyline from 30 to 60. There's still like one more arc in Stormblood that maybe we'll revisit in a quest log at some point. We could take this time to talk impressions, overall feelings. It's been, nice to revisit this stuff. I've done this semi-recently, but not really recently. And I think this has a generally positive community reception, but I want to get your thoughts overall on how you enjoyed going back through this after kind of knowing what happens in Endwalker and
the whole structure
of the world and everything, like how this compares to all of that.
I mean, I think the thing for me is it's not perfect. Like, I have some quibbles or open questions with it, but also it doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
Mostly what it does is this is the kind of thing that builds out the world and makes it feel like it has other characters doing interesting stuff in it in a way that, look, for resource reasons, I kind of get why it's difficult to do this more widely, but like, if more side quests or job quests were just a little more thoughtful in this way, I think I'd be way more incentivized to do them.
Yeah.
I think that this is a level up in terms of just sort of like making it feel like there are lots of interesting sort of complex things happening around the periphery of our story that we're constantly playing through in a way that more stuff like this would go a long way towards making the world as a whole feel more fleshed out.
Yeah, and the thing about side quests and this game in general that it does, it's always going to struggle with, is that you're never going to know what's good until you do it.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to get engaged with the community you're going to have to explore and find things on your own to discover and be willing to... like perhaps have it wasted some time.
Yeah.
And just like chill out and be relaxed and sort of let the good stuff sort of sucker punch you once it happens. But I did highly encourage you to do these ones because I know you like tanking more than like, I don't know. I think that's the thing you were gravitating towards most. And this was like, this was a particularly good example of quests after having done the Paladin ones, which are atrocious.
The Paladin, yeah, like I took notes on those. And we never went over them because I was like, "Oh, this isn't just anywhere." Uh-huh.
it was just a big MacGuffin that didn't go anywhere. Yeah,
or even like I've done the Dancer ones and the Sage ones.
The Dancer ones kind of fun.
Yeah, they are.
I particularly like the Dancer ones. In retrospect, they were kind of a hook into Endwalker for the final days. I was like, oh, this Dance of the Dead or whatever is like the Song of Oblivion and stuff, and like there's some stuff about there's also some interesting stuff about in the bard quests about the Song of Oblivion that I think actually come up before they even knew what like the Song of Oblivion was, and I think that they pulled from that set of job quests to come up with the main hook of Endwalker, which is that's maybe a crackpot theory, but I think it is. Like, that stuff was written before the patch notes, like, before 3.2 came out, and we learned about the Sundering, and I think it was, like, it was kind of at the 3.0 mark where they like sat down and were like, okay, what the hell are we doing with this arc? Because we got La Habrea out of the way now. Maybe not like at that moment, but like once they were done writing 3.0, which was probably somewhere in the middle of 2.x or whatever, right? So I think that those are worth doing, even if it's a little, they're a little silly and kind of frivolous at the start. I think that's interesting. I don't know. Plus Bard is fun to play. Please, I hope they do rework Bard to make it, I don't know. Anyway.
Bard is on my short list of, like, if I had to work on one I had to level up from 5, like, yeah. Bard would probably be one of the ones I'd go for.
Well, yeah, there's plenty of ways to level up alts. Now, you know, one more, there's, like, squadrons and stuff, and we can maybe revisit more job quests in the future.
I think, to your point also about the side quest stuff, I think my plan when Dawn Trail comes out is to try and sit with it a bit more. Like, the format of the show had us being very compulsive.
It's a lot easier to do all the side quests when the expansion's new.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm like, and I'm going to spend like more time just kind of in that.
That's
sort
what
of spending
I did.
Time hanging
yeah,
out.
With Endwalker, I just did all the side quests, all of them in every zone, and leveled up all the jobs and stuff, and I had the time to do with it, and I didn't have to worry about it again. And I've done, I think, almost every side quest in the game.
That is still wild to me.
Like, there's a couple of long chains I haven't finished, and there's a couple of, I mean, not counting all the relics stuff as side quests and turn-in stuff.
Sure.
And there's a couple of achievement side quests I haven't done yet, but, like, pretty much everything on the map is cleared off for me. I mean, it's been fucking, what, 10 years? I don't know. The amount of years I say that I play this game changes from episode to episode. And I don't think I care anymore.
No, it's okay. The last decade is all a weird, hazy blur.
That's true. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Storm Buds. We really enjoy talking about the Dark Knight quests. I mean, I certainly enjoyed sitting in my MST3K seat. And I want to thank you all so much for listening, rating the episode on your podcast platform of choice. If you want to talk more about our if you want to talk with us more about your experience with the Dark Knight quests, if you've done them, you can join our Discord, where the link is in the description of the episode. Well, the link is in the link pop, which has links to everything. In the description of the episode. I think I kind of want to just start putting the Discord link in the general.
Make it easier.
Yeah. I think I should just
that's
start
the one we
can
break out.
That's the one. That's like the one that that's where I'm most active. I'm certainly I love hearing people's opinions and stuff on that. It is very motivating. Next episode we are going to veer a little bit off.
Yeah, no, I think we can talk about this. Totally came up randomly today.
Yeah. We're going to veer off the beaten path. We're going to talk a little bit about some games from Alex's childhood.
90s, baby. We're going back.
We're going way back. And so that's hopefully pretty exciting to you guys. And if it's not, don't listen. I don't fucking know.
No, please still listen. Don't tell them that.
I give up. No, it's gonna be fun. We're gonna talk about some silly stuff. We got a fun game planned next week. But until then, you guys know the drill. It's
born of buds, storm of buds. We've been the Storm Buds, baby.